with us.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. There is a difficult-to-diagnose learning disability that has left some children labeled as dumb or lazy when, in fact, nothing could be further from the truth. They have dyslexia, a condition that makes it difficult for a person to read, to understand rapid-fire instructions, to remember the sequence of things, and a condition that makes it difficult to learn new words. Later in life, dyslexia can lead to difficulty doing math, learning a foreign language, even challenges in time management. It is a lifelong condition with no known cure, and one about which we are going to learn more about this hour. Dr. Craig Pullman directs Mind Matters, Southeast Psych's Learning Success Program. He's also the author of How Can My Kids Succeed in School? Revealing Minds, and the co-author of Schools for All Kinds of Minds. Welcome to the program.
Great being here.
Nice to have you here. Elaine Triantis is the head of the lower school at the John Crossland School, formerly Door Academy. She has worked with dyslexic students for, I think, 10 years and started the kindergarten program there in 2004. Thank you for joining us as well.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
People are very familiar with the Door Academy, I think, if you've lived here for any amount of time. When did you become John Crossland School?
We became John Crossland School 3 years ago. We are at a new location on Yorkmont, right off of Yorkmont Road here in Charlotte. It's a beautiful location. We came in, upfitted the building, perfect for our students. And in doing so, very thoughtful process in terms of the lighting in the building, the colors that were used, even the carpeting on the floor. We were truly catering to the needs of our students with learning differences.
And your kids have many different learning
differences. Yes, they do.
It's not just dyslexia. It's
That's
just
exactly right.
Also, Woody Jones is with us. He was just here moments ago, it seems as though. He's an architect and an app developer, but he's also the father of a dyslexic child who believes, I hope I'm not talking out of school here, but he believes that he too might have a touch of dyslexia, though he's never been formally diagnosed. Is that
very correct? True. Throughout the process of diagnosing my daughter, everybody's always told me she's a carbon copy of me. Mm-hmm. And I definitely have found that I have many similarities and tendencies that she has. So
that's interesting, because I was going to ask you if you discovered this or came to this conclusion about yourself in the course of going through all the rigmarole that you have to go through to diagnose a child who has this.
It was. We actually were sitting in the room talking with my wife, my mom, and Dr. James in Southeast Psych's office. And they all kept looking at me, like nodding their heads. I didn't know what to say. I just stood there. Yeah, I guess you're right.
Well, we'll come back to that because I think that's fascinating. A lot of us have a passing acquaintance with dyslexia, and those of us who do, and I thought this too, think of it as a problem in which the person with dyslexia sees the letters in a word in a jumbled fashion. Either they're in the wrong order, or the letters are actually turned around in place, so a Q looks like a P, and a D may look like a B, or vice versa. But it's more than that, isn't it?
That type of dyslexia where it's a real visual problem, seeing things backward and jumbled, mm-hmm. That's actually very rare.
Really?
The much more prevalent form of dyslexia has to do with the sounds of words. And you can see this very early in kids who have difficulty with rhyming and breaking words into syllables. That later translates into difficulty then matching sounds to letters, and that's the essence of phonics.
So it's a sound problem for a lot of these kids.
For the vast majority of
really?
Kids with dyslexia.
Why do we then think that it's all about jumbled letters on a page? Because that really is, I think, maybe I'm just making this up, that's the predominant school of thought.
I have a theory about this.
Okay.
It goes back to an episode of Charlie's Angels in the mid-70s. I'm not kidding. There is a character that the Angels had to go undercover into a professional women's football league, and there was a character, not one of the Angels, who described herself as being dyslexic, and at the ultimate moment of the show, they drew a play for her, and she saw it backwards, and then that's how they won the football game. And I think millions of people saw that and thought dyslexia is about seeing things backwards.
Well, we've had two of your colleagues on from Southeast Psych in the past, and it's all coming back to me now. You guys are really into pop culture.
We are free thinkers.
Do we understand what words look like, what they sound like to a person with dyslexia?
to some extent. I mean, it's I think to really recreate the problem with sound-based dyslexia, you'd have to put on some headphones and do some weird things with a feedback loop so that you know you're hearing things just a little bit off, because just a few mistakes here and there make a big difference. Like the difference between an F sound or a V sound, that is very, very subtle. And you might get it, but if you're just a little delayed with that, that can cause some big difficulties with fluency.
And is the phonic component of this, is that why some of these young people have difficulty coping with rapid-fire instructions or people talking to them quickly or telling them what to do in what we would consider, I guess, to be normal speed, but they just can't process it fast enough?
It can, and also if you're having a hard time sounding out words, that will lead to comprehension problems that then can affect how well you understand when you're listening. So if you're not getting the practice understanding language through reading, then you're going to be, you know, at a disadvantage when later you're being given instructions or taking in information through a lecture.
So if you have – if your problem is the sound of words, not looking at words on a page and seeing them oddly shaped, the problem with reading becomes you don't understand what a D sounds like, what a P sounds like. You don't understand the difference in the sounds and how they relate to the letters on the page.
That's right. You might have trouble differentiating the sounds, which then can lead to difficulty matching the sounds to the letters. I've also run into a lot of kids who can differentiate the sounds, but it's all a memory problem for them. They can't remember what sounds go with what letters. And the difficulty there is that we have a lot of curveballs in English. Here's a quick spelling test for you, Mike. Spell the word if.
I-F.
Excellent job. Well done.
I-P-H.
We'll stick with your first one, your first answer. Now spell the word of.
O-V. O-F, excuse me.
O-F. Who in the world decided that the word of should be spelled O-F? We should be spelling it U-V.
Right.
And I got that problem wrong when I was in first grade, and I thought, who's in charge here? This is ridiculous. So when kids have to then memorize all these weird combinations between sounds and letters, they can run into trouble.
Well, English is particularly – it's full of things like that, because our language is an amalgamation of a lot of different things. So is this a particular problem for English speakers? Is it less so for, say, French or German speakers?
English words, 80 to 90% of them are mostly phonetic. So you could sound them out, but it's that 10 to 15% like of that can throw a wrench in the works. And there are languages that are more phonetic, that are more sound-based, like Spanish. And then there are languages that don't have any sound bases at all, the iconographic languages like Chinese.
Right.
So we're in the middle – closer to the more purely phonetic side.
So as Dr. Pullman has been talking, Elaine, you have been nodding vigorously in recognition of a lot of the things that he's talking about. So when a child comes to you that has difficulty with being able to detect the differences between the sounds of letters,
yes,
who doesn't remember the association of the sound with the letter,
yes,
is that something that teachers outside of your kind of school recognize? Is that something that they know how to deal with? And how do you then deal with it?
Well, we certainly hope that, and we know that there are many members of the community that are very qualified to teach reading to children and do a wonderful job. Mm-hmm. But when you have a student that has a learning difference and something like dyslexia, it makes that process all the more harder for them. And so we have in our school, we have members of our school that are trained in Orton-Gillingham, and that's an multi-sensory approach, structured approach to teaching reading. And we start with if we get our hands on the youngest students, we're thrilled because we can guide them from an early age and keep them from learning bad habits or keep them from learning things that they shouldn't have or wouldn't otherwise.
Well, let's back up for a second because, you know, I don't think people want to wait till first grade when reading begins to find out that this is going to be a problem.
Right.
Since it's so difficult to diagnose, how can you spot it? Can you spot it earlier than
I think
seven,
so many
six.
People send their children to preschool now. And a lot of our preschools in the area, while they learn through play, they use letters and numbers as teaching tools early on to prepare our students for kindergarten.
So if you're having, if your child is having trouble with the alphabet, that's a sign?
Well, the idea is that we hope that when they are entering into kindergarten that they learn pre-reading skills, and those would be learning the letters themselves, the sounds that go with those symbols, mm-hmm. and over time being able to attach those sounds to symbols and then put them together, those phonemes, in order to create a word.
I guess parents still read nursery rhymes to kids. Nursery rhymes are rhymes.
Absolutely.
Yes, they are, and they're wonderful. That's a wonderful tool.
And if your child is having trouble repeating or remembering
Absolutely.
Those nursery rhymes, that's a sign?
Yeah, Elaine's right that difficulty with the alphabet and with very beginning words, with reading words, that's a red flag. But before print is even introduced to kids with at age 3 or 4, if your child has a hard time playing with words, just orally spoken words, like rhyming, mm-hmm. that's a red flag.
Given the breadth of this, and we'll talk more about other signs of this and other ways that dyslexia affects people throughout their lives, how would you define it?
Dyslexia, the most basic definition is it's a hard time reading. You have a hard time reading. So you said it's really hard to diagnose.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it's not that hard. I mean, if someone comes to me.
Only because I've read that.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
But if someone comes to me and says, my child has a hard time reading, I want to know if they have dyslexia, I say, yeah, they do.
Really? Because I had a hard time reading.
The key is why.
Okay.
Saying that a kid has dyslexia is a bit like saying, my child has a fever of 103, and then the pediatrician saying, oh, you have fever disorder. The key is, why is there a temperature of 103? Because that will tell you what to do about it. That drives the treatment. So we want to get beyond just saying dyslexia and get at the root causes of it, whether it's sound or the memory issue or whatever.
Well, you've described dyslexia as a brain-based disorder with a genetic component, but environmental factors are important as well. So let's break that down. Is dyslexia passed down in families, or is there a propensity to pass it down? In other words, our guest over here, Woody Jones, is working on getting his child diagnosed and discovers in the course of that maybe he has a touch of this himself.
There's definitely a genetic component. But the genetics can work directly and indirectly. So if you're a parent, if a parent had difficulty learning to read, so there's this brain-based propensity to have difficulty with sounds or with the memory aspect of reading or whatever. So that can get passed on. But then if you're that adult, that parent who had a hard time reading, you're going to probably be a reluctant reader. And you might not read that much. There might not be that much reading in the home. There might not be a language-rich environment. And that can then affect the development and the skill development for the child.
And what about the environmental aspect of this? When you talk about there could be environmental factors, what might those factors be?
Just exposure to print. If you've got a household.
It's not some toxin in the atmosphere.
No. Okay. It's more just what experiences you're getting.
So if your parents read to you often as a child, is that helpful to a dyslexic?
Absolutely. Well, that's helpful for everybody.
Okay, of course. Yeah, I know.
But that's really, really critical for someone who has the propensity for dyslexia.
What we found out was Annika was memorizing everything. She wasn't really reading it. She would memorize a lot of the things. She loves the same books. We read them over and over.
Mm-hmm, right.
And so we thought she was reading, but she was really just pointing at the words and saying what she memorized. So.
I know that you want to jump in on this, Elaine, but we have to take a break. I'll let you do it on the other side. We're talking about dyslexia and how it presents itself and treatments for it and what you do for kids and for adults because it goes through your life. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Charlotte Preparatory School, providing a pre-K to 8 educational experience founded on academic excellence, character development, and leadership in a friendly, diverse community. Details on the January 13th open house at charlotteprep.org. Well, even as newspapers have fallen on hard times, Disney is making money with Newsies. Musical that took Broadway by storm is coming to Charlotte. It opens tonight. It's a true story about a group of newspaper boys in 1899 who went on strike for higher pay against James Randolph Hearst and the Pulitzer Organization, and they won. And we'll hear about that in the first part of the show tomorrow. Then Molly Barker from Girls on the Run is back to tell us about her latest endeavor, an attempt to address political polarization using young people or with young people. That's tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Image versus Reality. Why some say public misperceptions about the U.S. military lead to careless spending, strategic errors, and wars we cannot win.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking this morning about dyslexia, how it presents in children, how it can affect your life, how people are learning to understand this disorder and helping young people to become successful despite of it. I'm going to read off later on in this program a list the size of the New York City phone book of of people who have succeeded in spite of this, and maybe because of having dyslexia, but we'll get to that later on. For those of you listening who are Twitter followers, if you have a family member with dyslexia, what hurdles have you had to face with education, and how have you jumped those hurdles? Send us your comments via Facebook or on Twitter at WFAE. So now Elaine Triantis is with us. She's the head of the lower school of the John Crosland School, the school that specializes in children with learning disabilities. Dr. Craig Palmas, director of Mind Matters at Southeast Psych, and Woody Jones is an architect and app developer who's also the father of a dyslexic child. I want to get into something you just said on off the air, but I want to give Elaine a chance to jump in. We were just talking about, prior to the break, about the environmental and the
academic?
No.
Genetic.
Genetic. Thank you very much. The environmental and genetic component of this, because it is – there is a propensity to pass it down, and you were jumping out of your chair trying to say something. You remember what it was?
Yes. I am so glad that we, at the John Crosland School, finding that, going along with what you were just saying about students being able to attach sounds to symbols and letters and being able to put them together and not be, as you were talking about with your daughter, become a sight reader. We understand that students need the extra help in reading, and we provide three periods a day that are specifically for reading. One is reading tutorial, which is the Orton-Gillingham approach. And then we have a comprehension piece that you had also talked about. And then, of course, later we find that it also goes into the writing, their daily writing. Orton-Gillingham, as I said, is a directed, structured approach to teaching reading. And most importantly, it's a multi-sensory approach. Because students with dyslexia have that issue with processing, it is multi-sensory teaching by simultaneously using visual, auditory, and kinesthetic tools in order to enhance the memory and learning. And links are made between visual, what we see, auditory, what we hear, and then the kinesthetic, what we feel, pathways in order to read and to spell. So for our youngest students, as they come in, it really ends up being learning through play. If they're learning the letter B, we not only are we showing them the letter and we're saying B, but we're also using our fingers to trace that letter. And we're doing those things simultaneously. We do it in groups of three. We'll do it with paint. We'll cook with it. We'll do art with it till we are done with that letter. B is B is B.
So when a child has difficulty has dyslexia and they have difficulty remembering the sound associations of letters, and you spend a day on B, and they
spend until they've got it.
So they've got it.
Mm-hmm.
And you've moved on to C, D, E, F, and G. And
right.
When you come back to B, do they remember it?
We certainly hope that they remember it, because everything that we do is a building block. We never introduce anything new or send home something that hasn't already been included in what the child has learned. And so you were talking about students being able to come home and to read. We call that controlled text. So if we're teaching a child to read and we're working on the short A sound, ah, we might send home a book that has just it's full of words that have that ah sound. We may include later beeb. So you may have a word in it later that has the b sound. So what we're doing is setting them up for success using controlled text. We move along, and the curriculum, the idea is that they learn these individual phonemes. After that, they learn – they blend them together, the sounds back together. As words get longer, those syllabication rules and knowledge of syllable types, breaking down words into orders to be able to read them, right. Then later you can write them. It's really a process. It's like you're learning the code.
Now, they specialize in all this. Your child was not at John Crosland School, I don't think, prior to
No, diagnosis. She's in public school.
And I mentioned that it's difficult to diagnose because that's what I read, and from what your anecdotal evidence would indicate, at least among non-professional doctor people, non-doctor people,
right.
It was difficult to diagnose because you kept saying that it took you 4 years to figure out what was wrong here.
Pretty much so. I felt like I knew something was wrong when she was in kindergarten, when we would read to her.
Why?
I would read to her, and she would see words, and she either wouldn't know where a word stopped and started, or she would just say a word that it might have started with the S sound, but the rest of the word was completely different. She would find a word that fit into the storyline, but the word was not the one that was on the page.
That's pretty smart.
Yeah, she's a smart kid. She's making straight A's now, but she was making C's prior to that because she was struggling so hard. But it was really tough because the teachers were giving us kind of counter information. They were saying that kids, well, that's okay. Some kids just do that, mm-hmm. and they'll kind of move along to the next year. And we had a really hard time trying to get to the root of the problem. So we spent several summers getting her some reading help. We did a Sylvan Learning one summer. We did a tutor one summer. And she basically, she didn't get any better, but she didn't get worse. So but she just lost a summer.
I think that's where that multi-sensory approach comes in. If you were reading with your child and she's very, very young and she says that b sound at the beginning of the word and she starts to guess, we give our students tools like they learn to tap out sounds. If they're reading the word bat, it's b. They are actually segmenting those individual phonemes. As a parent, you're listening and you're saying, oh, she's got it. She's got it. Oh, no, she doesn't have that one. And so you're kind of making that mental note that there is a problem. Like, but she's not quite getting that.
And this response that you got from traditional education about, well, a lot of kids do this, or that's not so bad. You know, this is evidently not an uncommon reaction. Given what I read yesterday on dyslexia.com, one of the common characteristics is someone telling parents that their child isn't behind enough or bad enough to be helped in a school setting.
We have a phrase in the trade for this. It's called waiting to fail. So I get a lot of referrals for dyslexia when kids are in third, fourth, fifth grade. And it's the same story that Woody is telling me, that kids are struggling but in subtle ways that don't look that to classroom teachers who are very well-meaning, but they've got 25, 30 other kids in their classrooms. And so they can't really differentiate what's normal differentiation or normal difficulty versus dyslexia until the bottom falls out.
How many kids, because we see the light go out of kids' eyes sometimes around the fourth or fifth grade, mm-hmm. because they're having trouble in school. It's not fun to go there anymore. It's a chore to go there. It's embarrassing to go there. It lowers their self-esteem to go there. How much of that has to do with the fact that many of these children might be suffering from some form of dyslexia, because there are so many different forms?
It's a huge factor. 5 to 10%, some estimates are up to 17% of school kids have dyslexia. So that's a big chunk of every classroom. And the other thing that happens late elementary is there's a shift in the curriculum from learning to read to reading to learn.
Right.
So in other words,
absolutely.
A lot of the content, the knowledge that you're taking on as a student comes from starting to read basic textbooks. And if you're struggling with reading, you're not
right.
getting all that good stuff.
And comprehension, the difficulty in comprehending what you've just read is one of the major stumbling blocks for these kids. 17% might have this?
Yes, that's the upper estimate.
That's amazing. Now, there are
5 to 17%.
One of the problems here, it seems to me, is that there are, 10 different subgroups of this? Or how many different varieties, how many garden varieties of dyslexia are there?
Personally, I don't think you could put a number on it because of all the different combinations. We haven't even talked about attention.
Okay.
Right.
Because ADHD, difficulty focusing on details, that
is
and
part
just
of
maintaining
it.
Your concentration, that can affect reading as well. It can affect how well you're available for reading instruction. If your mind is wandering, thinking about the daisies and, you know, the lilacs and all sorts of other things, you're not going to be...
Well, now, wait a minute. That's not dyslexia. That's ADHD, right? Although there is an attention component to some forms of dyslexia.
But if you've got ADHD, uh-huh. It can lead to dyslexia because you're not available for that instruction and you're not getting that practice. And it can, I would characterize that as one of those environmental factors that can lead to dyslexia or make it worse.
And what about the processing of it? If you are given, you were talking about earlier, about giving multi-step directions, for someone with dyslexia, they may hear that first bit of what you said and they're processing what you said or trying to, mm-hmm. but they have missed the next two or three directions. And then again, there they are. They find themselves in a bad way. Not certainly an ill-meaning, but just because they were trying to catch up with what you said originally. And I think a lot of teachers can, and this is teachers in every classroom, and they try to do these things, keep their information short and concise and direct. So you're setting them up so that they can follow through and then move on mm-hmm. to the next expectation.
How do you diagnose this?
You really have to look at reading itself, just hear a student read. You follow along with them so you can pick up on the types of mistakes that they're making. You time them to figure out what their reading rate is. And that'll give you a sense of where the breakdowns are. And then you introduce some other tasks that are like little experiments. So you might take print out of the equation and just go through some sound-based tasks. Or you might go through some memory tasks. Or you might go through some speed-based tasks. So I start at the surface at just reading words, and then I dig underneath with some more specific assessments.
Hmm. This has got to be a cooperative effort between doctors and teachers and parents.
Absolutely.
To figure this out. Mm-hmm. Not to scare people, but I mean, because some kids have difficulty for a moment learning something. Maybe they can't remember a nursery rhyme because they don't like the nursery rhyme. How do you know when that is a problem, or it's just a momentary blip? How do you know?
You look for a pattern. You do want to look at things over time, not 4 or 5 years when the kid is suddenly struggling in fourth grade, like what happened with Woody's daughter. But you do want to. You don't want to just base it on a bad day, mm-hmm. and you want to see things in multiple settings. You know, not just the classroom, but are there difficulties when you're reading at home? Wherever. So you want to get different viewpoints on the situation.
How much do you think this has contributed to illiteracy? There are still people who can't read who are adults in this country. Was their problem that in childhood?
Yes. By some estimates, half of U.S. adults are functionally illiterate.
Half?
Half. Now that,
and functionally illiterate would mean
so
what?
That means they could they can sound out some words and get through some basic stuff. But they're unable to break apart unknown words, newly encountered words, or really get into the deeper level of comprehension, which means they're not going to be able to read an article about a difficult intellectual topic, say, in a magazine, mm-hmm. for people who read magazines or newspapers or online, or pick up a novel and get all that rich information, all that rich knowledge that's out there.
Since you noticed this, or you began to recognize signs of this in yourself, Woody, as you were coming to terms and coming to a diagnosis for your daughter, looking back, what did you see? What do you see in yourself, in your development, in your education, in your ability to read now, or your learning to read then, that became clear to you because of this?
Well, thinking back, I mean, when I was a kid, my mom sent me to reading classes. During the summers, I was a slow reader. I think my issue is more of a processing issue. I can see the I can hear the sounds, I can sound out words, but I think I feel like I have a longer wire to get from here to there in my brain than you do. It just takes me a little bit longer to process it.
Mm-hmm.
So You're right. Sometimes when you get to that second or third thing, I'm still thinking about the first one.
And even if it's just a fraction of a second longer to decode a single word, you add that up over a paragraph.
Right.
Or several pages or a chapter, and suddenly it's taking you twice as long to read things than other people.
I know you specialize in teaching children with many disabilities over there at John Crosland, but do most of these kids come to you after diagnosis, or do you actually – maybe some of them come to you with one diagnosis and you discover through working with them that they actually have dyslexia?
Our students always come to us. They come with a psych evaluation in place. In other words, families have recognized, whether it was their own recognition or through observations, through teachers, and just through their pediatricians. And they see that there is a red flag, and for some reason they start to hunt and to dig, just like Woody did, to find out exactly what the diagnosis would be. Many of our students have more than one. It's very rare that we just see a child that just has ADD or just has dyslexia. And so when you put all these different diagnoses together, sometimes the way they present themselves is really very tricky. By the time our students come to us, they do have a psych evaluation. We take that information and we break it down, and we use the accommodations and recommendations that are given from doctors like Dr. Pullman in order to help us to make an individualized learning plan for the child. For example, we had a new student just start yesterday, but we do our own in-house testing immediately to see where they are. We'll go ahead and start and do just like we did yesterday in the Orton-Gillingham to find out exactly what that child knows and then place them accordingly.
Mm-hmm. What I like about John Crosland is sometimes the class size is one, but,
yes.
But it almost never gets above, what, eight?
Yeah.
It's a very small class size. You can manage the kids if there's a problem. You can get right to it.
We asked listeners to share stories of hurdles they or their family members have had to face with dyslexia. We have some of the responses now. Gwen on Facebook says, individualized education programs in public schools have helped a family member of mine when she was in elementary and middle school, and now she no longer needs help because she has improved so much, but there are still times where she struggles. Is it a lifelong struggle? If you get to a place like a John Crosland who gets you through over the hump, and works you into the point where you can read, where you can sound out new words, where you can understand what you've read, where you can remember what you've read, so that you move into your teenage years, into your adult years, able to read. Is it still a problem as you go through life?
You know, we've raised a lot of alarms here this morning, but I also want to give some hope. You can absolutely get over this. You can absolutely get over
completely.
That is possible. Dyslexia is a gradient of severity, and people who have severe dyslexia, maybe they have multiple factors affecting them, they might always have a hard time reading, but they can definitely improve. But someone who has milder forms or moderate forms of dyslexia, they can be remediated through excellent programs like at the John Crosland School, and they can get up to functional literacy and be very successful.
Hmm. How do you know it's just not bad eyesight?
Well, that's something that you want to – that's a rule out.
We had our daughter's eyes
that's
tested.
The easy
that was
one.
Part of the process.
And it's not just restricted to trouble in reading. It affects math later on, correct?
Because of something called a math word problem.
Which we will come back and talk about because we have to take a break. We're talking with Dr. Craig Pullman, Director of Mind Matters at Southeast Psych, Elaine Triantis with John Crosland School, and Woody Jones, an architect and app developer and the father of a dyslexic child. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Atrium Animal Hospital and Wellness Center, providing holistic animal health care for 18 years, offering pet parents a strategy to achieve and maintain furry family vitality. AtriumAnimalHospital.com. Debate over claims that a disconnect between the U.S. military and the public at large has led to careless spending, strategic errors, and wars that we cannot win. The topic of the conversation in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. In other words, holding the U.S. military accountable. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. And we're coming right back.
This is Amy Rogers from WFA Eats 90.7's food blog, where we share stories about food. Are you looking for new recipes? This winter, find local food suggestions and more at WFAEats.org. And pick up other great food ideas and cooking tips every Sunday afternoon from 3 to 5 with America's Test Kitchen and The Splendid Table on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about dyslexia today. There's so much to talk about. There's not enough time. But one of the things that this does impact, aside from reading, is math. And I just brought that up before the break. And Dr. Pullman, you said it's because of math word problems, because they can't understand what the problem is.
Exactly. You know, we talked about things that happen late elementary school. I've seen a lot of kids who have dyslexia, and their parents say, they used to be so great at math. Math was their best subject, and now they hate math, or now they're failing math. And, you know, they can solve a problem. They can perform basic calculations. They can multiply, subtract, add, whatever. But when you have a math word problem, you have to pull the numbers out, and you have to figure out what operations to use from the language of the problem.
So if it takes Farmer Jones 10 minutes to plow his field, and it takes Farmer Smith 5 minutes to plow his field, and Farmer Jones is going 20 miles an hour, what do we know about Farmer Smith? They can't make that leap.
That's right. But if you were to pull the numbers out and put the operations on the page, the student can figure it out right away. They can compute that. A lot of students with dyslexia could do that if you give them that support.
One of the preschool signs, I'm told, are early childhood ear infections.
Oh, yeah.
Why?
Yeah. When you have a lot of ear infections, it's been described as living underwater. That's what sounds are like. There you go. There you go. So that's going to affect how clearly you're getting language to your brain, which then affects how well you can process it and understand it and comprehend it. And then – so if that happens over time, it's going to degrade the development of your receptive language and lead to problems later.
Other signs include delayed speech, difficulty in memorizing the alphabet, which we talked about later in childhood. I got to be dyslexic. Later in childhood, messy writing is a cue. Why messy writing? Because they can't remember how to make the letters or what they sound like, so they just kind of scribble something down?
You know, graphomotor problems, that's what we call it, graphomotor difficulty connecting your brain to your hand. That's a comorbid condition for a lot of kids, and not everybody. I mean, I've got graphomotor problems, but I can read good.
Well, are there other challenges aside from reading and math problems and maybe attention problems because the child is trying to process what you just said so they miss what you're saying now? What other ways does this impact you or manifest itself as you go through your teenage years, your tween years, your teen years, your young adult years?
I think it affects their executive function skills, which is their daily ability to get through a simple operation every single day and do it independently. So when I talk about executive function, I'm talking about being able to fend for themselves, being able to be organized, being able to put their materials together so that they can be successful.
Are you seeing this in yourself? Are you seeing this in your daughter?
I guess the point I like to make is confidence. Annika had very little self-confidence, and as she started progressing and she started failing, she just couldn't process it because she wasn't given the tools to do it.
That's what this leads to. If you don't get it corrected, it leads to lack of self-confidence, low self-esteem.
Correct.
Because
you're
failing.
Oh, we see that. We see that so much. They come in with just a very low self-esteem because they have failed so many times. And you know, once you've done something wrong so many times, you don't want to get up in front of a group. You don't want to read out loud. You don't want to go to the board. Who wants to do something and just fail and fail and fail?
Right. Well, even going to McDonald's, you can't read the menu up there. It's very, you know, troublesome.
And what's more, reading has the power to provide some magical experiences in your life. Mm-hmm. Last year, I read the entire Harry Potter series with my oldest son. And I read a lot of it to him. And then we read in parallel, but like the end of all the final books, we read it together. And it was amazing. And it was just a great shared experience. But people with dyslexia, they're denied those types of experiences, and that's a big emotional toll.
Would it be difficult for a dyslexic child, maybe a severely dyslexic child, to understand what you were reading to them?
That depends. There are some forms of dyslexia where it wouldn't be an issue if you're reading to the child.
Okay.
But there's the more comprehension type of dyslexia. They would have a hard time even if they're listening.
Later in life, in the teen and early adult years, one of the signs, I'm told, is trouble understanding jokes or expressions that have a meaning not easily understood from the specific words, like saying, oh, it's a piece of cake. They would not understand that meant that it's easy. Would that be difficult to recognize in earlier years? Because it seems to me that kids certainly have senses of humor. So if your child doesn't get the joke – or doesn't see the social cues, that could be confused. Not only that could be autism. It could be Asperger's.
Right.
I guess it could be dyslexia. Now, how do you know the difference?
Well, you know the difference by looking at a bunch of perspectives on the situation: the social skills as well as reading, just the viewpoints of a lot of different people. But the issue with humor like that, there's this phrase we use in education called the Matthew effect. It's from the Bible, where you know the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. If you're free of dyslexia, you're going to read a lot. That's going to give you access to language. You're going to pick up those idioms. You're going to get that humor. Then you're going to be able to understand it in spoken language. If you have dyslexia, you're not going to read that much. You're not going to have all those experiences, all that exposure, and then you're not going to pick up on those jokes.
Let me get back to some listener contributions here. Joe D. emails, my 19-year-old son was diagnosed late when he was 18. He was never flagged in elementary school, even though we knew he was struggling. When he was 9, we moved to Italy, and he seemed to improve. It is a phonetic language, and his reading and spelling improved. But when we returned to the States when he was 15, it was obvious he was struggling again. Although learning a foreign language is a typical issue for people with dyslexia, my son speaks Italian, Spanish, and English fluently. I think it had a lot to do with learning the foreign language before age 12. My question is, when it is proven that so many children have various learning disabilities or difficulties, why are standardized time tests so prevalent? And is there a push to get rid of these?
Well,
that's a big one.
That is a big one. We don't do time tests. In fact, we don't even do the EOGs, which is the end of grade testing. We do MAP testing, which is a good measure of a student's success and growth. We do them twice a year. We do it in the spring and we do it in the fall. And that measures how much they have grown over the course of time.
I know that you can't speak for CMS or other public school systems in the state, but I'm sure that you deal with students, Doctor, who go to those public schools and other private schools that are not dedicated to children with learning disabilities. So how do they handle it? I mean, do they make allowances for children who know the material, can process the material if they have the time to process it, but would not function well on a timed test?
That they do, which is the good news, that you can secure accommodations like extended time for testing through public schools and also for tests like the SAT and the ACT. You have to get a psychological evaluation. You have to have the recommendation of a professional advocating for the student's needs, and it doesn't always work out. But there's a good chance that a student can get those accommodations if you fight for it.
Muhammad in Charlotte writes, what resources do parents have for children that suffer from dyslexia in the school systems? Does Charlotte have specialized schools? Well, we have one right here that cater to the needs of dyslexic students. How many? Which ones? Is there a list of resources to assist parents on what is available in our community? Well, one is the John Crossland School. There are others, I'm sure.
There's the Fletcher School.
Yes, there is the Fletcher School.
I'm not aware of – those are the only two we – kind of interviewed before we chose.
But CMS would know these other schools and would know these resources, correct?
Yes, and hopefully they would make recommendations when they're appropriate in the best interest of the student.
Would doctors know this? I mean, and do doctors – you're, I guess, a psychologist, correct?
That's right.
So would every child, every parent seek out a psychologist, or would they go to their general practitioner more often than not if their child is having this kind of a problem?
They'll mostly go to a psychologist – But I do get referrals from pediatricians. Mm-hmm. So some parents go to the pediatrician and then they send them on to me.
Okay. Allison, who runs a nonprofit program to help kids with dyslexia, writes, Augustine tutors utilize multisensory methods to teach children sight words. Dr. Pullman discussed the difficulty some children have memorizing the irregular words in English. We have children skywrite the words, trace words on surface as they visually see the word written on a card. Among other strategies, repetition is a key. We teach phonics in a multisensory way as well. When a child learns a new letter, they say the name of the letter, the sound that it makes as they trace the letter with the three fingers on a surface. It sounds very much like what you're doing at John Crossland. We work with children whose families cannot afford private tutoring or wonderful schools like Crossland and Fletcher. I wish she'd given the name of the school that she runs. You wanted to talk about visualizing and verbalizing, and that sounds like what she's talking about here.
Yes, very, very similar. We felt so good about the Orton-Gillingham, but we thought we needed to add something more for the comprehension piece. As you were talking about, when students come to us early, they learn how to read, and then later they are reading to learn. But if they're reading to learn and not comprehending, then we have a problem. And so we felt like we needed more in that area. We had teachers this summer that went and worked with the Linda Mood Bell series, visualizing and verbalizing. And the idea there is that we're teaching our teachers to be able to learn how to question students using techniques that bring mental imagery to a student's mind. So as they're looking at pictures, they are asking questions. And you're not saying, what do you see? You're saying, what do you picture? And you're trying to pull out all of those things, size and shape and number and background. And you're trying to develop their ability to verbalize what they see.
Okay. I want to go back to Allison's email, because obviously I missed the name of the school that was in the email. Augustine is the name of the school, which takes children who cannot afford other private schools. Janie emails, our son is now 21, and he failed out of his first semester freshman year. My husband and I are public school teachers with advanced degrees. We're a very heavy reading family and value education. We kept saying that we thought our son had a reading difficulty. We paid out of pocket for an extensive exam that ruled out ADHD and only a mild case of ADD. Nothing else was diagnosed, but he avoids reading. I just know in my bones that it's a reading issue. Now he's training to be a manager of a restaurant. He's sharp, picks up on lessons quickly, and is hardworking. It's the reading. Is there a place where he could go, or their family could send him, so they could figure out if it's a reading problem?
There is. I see kids as young as 4, and I see kids through the college years. So there are psychologists that can assess a student like that.
So a child can get into college who has been undiagnosed but who has dyslexia. How?
Well, I would think that's a mild form of dyslexia. So, you know, Woody's daughter, you know, can kind of fill in the gaps with some of those words that she's missing. I think this student here, this college-age student, has done the same thing, enough to get by. But when you get to college-level work, you can't be missing, you know, every, you know, 10th word and really get the meaning.
Well, if you are at that level and you have a mild form or maybe a medium form of dyslexia and you've skated by because you are remarkably intelligent and you can fill in the blanks enough to get ahead, is it too late to change how you do things? Is it too late to learn what you would learn if you were 7 and worked your way through primary school with specialized education? Is it too late?
No, but it will take some work and some time and some commitment. Some people forget it. They go on with their lives and they do other things. But for people who want to improve, they can if they want to.
Annalena on Facebook writes, my daughter and our household is bilingual, Spanish-English, and had a hard time when she began reading. After some tutoring, individualized education program in school, 3rd through 5th grade, we had a lot of motivation at home. She discovered the Harry Potter books. She started reading and hasn't stopped since. She's now a voracious reader, doing well in high school, excelling in everything, including a third language. Her only real issue remains spelling. That's probably not dyslexia, then, is it?
What do you think, Elaine?
Well, definitely. The nice thing about the Orton-Gillingham and learning the phonemes and blending sounds is that you're also learning to encode, which is right. Mm-hmm. So perhaps there is something there where she hasn't quite learned all of the rules for reading because they apply to the spelling rules.
Now, Dr. Pullman, you said, and it's a very good thing to repeat, I think, that these kids can be helped, they can succeed, and they can overcome this condition.
Yes.
Can children overcome it? And actually, if you discover it in the first, second, or preschool, first, second, third, fourth grades, and you get help, can these kids be mainstreamed into regular classrooms at some point?
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. The earlier the identification, the better, because you get on it before it can really take root, the problem, yes. And the more remediation, the better.
Does technology help?
Oh, absolutely.
How?
First of all, I think that we started this year. We have an Odyssey project, and it's a blended learning platform, which means that we're taking formal education and we're incorporating the delivery and the content with technology. And for some of our students that are not very verbal, this really gives them an opportunity to shine.
Let me spend a moment here reading the New York phone book. people with dyslexia are not dumb. They don't suffer from low intelligence. They have some problems reading and understanding and processing. In fact, some really prominent, successful people have had to deal with this. Let me just tell you a few of them. Henry Winkler, Orlando Bloom, Patrick Dempsey, Tom Cruise, Cher, Keira Knightley, Bruce Jenner, Anthony Hopkins, Jay Leno, Anderson Cooper, Whoopi Goldberg, Agatha Christie, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Edgar Allan Poe, Charles, I don't know how we know that about Poe, but Charles Schwab, Steven Spielberg, Hans Christian Andersen, Beethoven, Richard Branson, astronaut Pete Conrad, Leonardo da Vinci, Albert Einstein, Steve Jobs, Pablo Picasso, Thomas Edison, Ted Turner, Walt Disney, Alexander Graham Bell, Winston Churchill, George H.W. Bush, George Washington, Woodrow Wilson, John F. Kennedy, Nelson Rockefeller, Thomas Jefferson. Let me stop there. They were all said to have dyslexia. It almost sounds like it's a genius ingredient. So there's some bright side there. I want to thank you all for the hour. Charlotte Thomas.